Want great pay and lots of perks? Get a $1,500 sign-on bonus when you join the Verizon retail team in the San Francisco Bay Area now. Help connect customers with the perfect products every time. Apply at Verizon.com/retail jobs. Verizon is an equal opportunity employer.
The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years' combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
It's officially December. Jeez.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah.
All right. Well, close to that sacred time.
Yes. The happy holidays time.
Oh, please. I have more people with that. We were having a big discussion at Lucky Mojo about why would you put up a Christmas tree? What's the reason?
So, like the legit, what's the symbolism of
yes.
that?
Oh. Yes, actually
nice.
Asking a question about it and following through and having this really great discussion.
Yeah.
So there is open-minded points of reference.
Yeah. Well, it is a pagan symbol, which we will be discussing on Friday, December 16th.
Yes.
When we have our show about the winter solstice.
See? But as we have said, here we are with the cauldron.
Yes.
So how was your week?
My week, let's see. It's December, so I am freaking out about that. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's been pretty busy.
Uh-huh.
All good, fun things, but busy. I have a big ritual tomorrow that I've been prepping for most of today, so I'm a little spacey
uh-huh.
on that. And then also I have the big winter solstice ritual with Starhawk,
right,
who does a winter solstice ritual every year in Sebastopol and has, I think this is our 28th.
Oh, my.
7th, 28th. I can't remember. I should probably know that. But I help organize that ritual, and it is the biggest one we have in the North Bay,
mm-hmm.
and it is a lot to plan and organize,
mm-hmm.
and I did a lot of that work today, like
mm-hmm.
reaching out to the volunteers and confirming who's going to build altars and who's going to do invocations and
oh my.
Getting all of that, the insurance, you know, like planning rituals are so, public rituals are so much fun.
Right.
And I love doing it. I've described this to other people. It kind of feels like being a director.
Mm-hmm.
Like I get to put people in the roles and,
right.
and tell them how I went to stage design.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. But then it's, you know, I have to sign a contract for the rental hall.
Right.
I have to get an insurance writer.
Right.
You know, and there's all that boring stuff
yeah.
you have to do. And,
but see, when you're doing production, whether it's theater or film or any of that, that's the other side of
oh,
the
yeah.
production end of it for sure.
Yeah. And it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
I am the main organizer for this one.
Mm-hmm.
All the other rituals in the North Bay, there's a group of people. But because Starhawk's schedule is so insanely busy, she actually just got home from Standing Rock.
I was going to say, I
yeah.
thought she made a big splash up there from
yeah.
in our community. Cause
yeah, she yeah, and the Spiral Dance from San Francisco donated some money.
Mm-hmm.
She was hand-delivering that, too.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, she's so insanely busy and
mm-hmm.
such a, you know, she's a wonderful ritualist and priestess and earth advocate.
Mm-hmm.
So this ritual is a little bit different because it needs a special focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she can come in and make her magic and then go off to do it someplace else.
Exactly. She is flitting from hither to yon.
Yeah, so for folks who are in the area, mm-hmm. it is on Sunday, December 18th. It will be at the Sebastopol Community Center. It's doors open at 6:30. The ritual starts at 7. You do not have to reserve or buy tickets in advance, but, you know, come early because if we do reach capacity at the building, I will have to close the doors.
Right. Fire.
Yeah. But we have a pretty high capacity. I think we'll be okay, but you never know.
This year you don't know. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. And, and, you know, with the election, I think this year people really need it. So.
Yeah.
Ritual is healing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, how are you now that I've talked for 20
minutes? Oh, heck, you know, it's another day, another week. I had my highs and my lows, highs where I had a lot of clients and, you know, wound up having that kind of excitement of, you know, doing more with people than I normally need, busy. And the lows were, you know, some regular everyday stuff dealing with getting my passport in order, and there's some issues about, you know, some name stuff. And, you know, when we change our names, whether it's spiritually or, marriage-wise, in times past, it wasn't as rigid or looked at in such finite way.
Yeah, you could open a bank account with any name you wanted.
I know. And now it's so not that at all. And it kind of is a scary thing putting all of what I had together because I have had a lot of names, not just married names, you know, spirit names that I took things out in that are out there in the world.
Yeah.
So it was a kind of an experience that I had to go through, but it's evening out right now. And then, you know, I've successfully paid off where I live and got that all taken care of.
That's very exciting.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
And
Christmas.
Thank you. It was, and it's very interesting. It all is happening close to my birthday.
Yeah.
So, you know, along with something my husband used to talk about, he's a Rosicrucian, and he said, you know, the last of the seven allocated times of 55 days, cycles, is right before your birthday, and that's usually pretty intense because, you know, whatever you haven't resolved, you have to, it's like it pushes you to the very nth, and then there's like a threshold to cross, and that's how I felt.
I am fascinated by that concept. We'll have to talk about that more.
Yes. After,
because my birthday's in April.
Uh-huh.
Every year something goes to shit for me in April.
Yep.
How interesting.
Yes.
I love this. We should do a show about this.
We will have to. I have a lot of information on that because, you know, his was always around September, and for the last few weeks, it was always he was lying, you know, and it would just do his work, and then he'd come home, and, you know, it's like groaning, and
right.
I thought he was drama queen, and then, you know, I kind of asked questions, and I thought, yeah, because, you know, I'm around the holidays. I'm already amped up.
Right, at this time of year anyway.
And then suddenly I began to see patterns.
How interesting.
So, yeah, that's my contribution for my week.
Thank
I am
you.
In my last energy cycle. So
good.
But with that, I do have to say that I am pretty excited about the cauldrons.
Yeah.
That was, you know, it's kind of exciting because a long time ago when I first came up here and started my store and met some of the people that are my very dear friends, we started a group of women called the Sisterhood of the Red Cauldron.
Mm, nice.
And we did channeling and we did all kinds of rituals and it was very profound.
Right.
So
right.
This has a special place in my heart.
Well, the name of my house is Cauldron House.
Ah.
My partner and I dubbed it that because he is a dedicant of Caradwyn. Who is a goddess connected to cauldrons.
Yes.
And I am dedicated to several deities, but one of them is Bridget, who is a blacksmith. Who
right.
Would, you know, work with iron and things cauldron-esque.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, I'm also excited about this. It's very Celtic and that, you know, as I've mentioned, is very much where my heart is.
True. I agree.
I have a lot of fun stuff around cauldrons.
So, actually, the Latin word caldarium means hot bath.
Love it.
I think it's cool.
Caldarium. There is a, when I taught at Cloudcatcher Witch Camp, we were in a old dormant volcano called a caldera.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So clearly that language is connected.
Exactly.
Love it.
Yep. And a very dear friend of mine sent me some beautiful pictures of literally a volcano that collapsed in, you know, and it's actually got the caldera there. That's
neat.
It's really, you know, you look at that and you go, I can understand why our ancestors really got into this.
Next time I take a bath, I'm going to go into the caldarium.
There you are.
Take my waters.
Take your waters. Well, best that than other things.
Yes.
So, as a symbol.
Yes.
It is the feminine.
Right, which is, makes sense, right? It's the belly.
The belly, the womb.
Like a belly.
Yes.
Yep.
Little round pot with legs.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to consider my belly a round belly with a pot with legs on it, but it's okay.
Well, if you've ever seen a pregnant woman.
Oh, yeah.
It's quite round.
Yes.
You know, cauldron-like.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the mythology that we'll talk about is connected to things being reborn or brought into life or brewed and created in a cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening in the belly, in the womb, when a baby is being gestated.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
You don't have to go far to see the symbolism there.
No, no. So I will let you start with a segment that you would like to pick out as what we will start with.
Cool.
Yay.
Well, let's start with sort of the boring mundane stuff, right?
Okay.
So what is a cauldron? It's a large metal pot, right?
Yes.
And like we talked about on the Athame show, that was a tool that you could have in plain sight and no one would question was something magical.
Right.
It's the same with the cauldron, not modern, right? If you have a giant cauldron in your living room now and your mother-in-law comes over, she's going to go, what's that? But back in the day, that's where you did all your cooking. There was basically one primary pot that cooking happened in. And depending on the type of witchcraft you may have been practicing, you may have had a second one because you don't want to be making potions and mixtures and salves that are poisonous and then making your stew in that the next day.
Point taken.
Right. But it's literally a pot that is metal and hangs over a fire and you cook and create things with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that image of the old hag stirring a brew in the cauldron actually became popular from Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't a concept of witches before Shakespeare brought that into the folklore.
What's in the cult? Was it commercializing?
Yes, there you go. Ancient commercializing.
There you go.
And that's really stuck. Like in Macbeth, the bubble, toil and trouble.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first showing of witches being over a cauldron, and it stuck. And we still use it.
Of course.
And it's legit. It's where you're going to cook the herbal salves. It's where you're going to cook the healing balms. It's where you're going to create the potions and the mixtures and the things. And so it's interesting, the things that took hold and were continued to be part of it.
Well, definitely, you know, some of the things is that it's, you know, basically it is a receptacle.
Yes.
It is a symbol of forces of transmutation and germination. And interesting is that, you know, it has a sort of reference, which we will get into later, with the skull.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which I found also totally fascinating. And what I'm finding is the resurgence of the use of the skulls and crossbones and skulls and things like that, not only because, you know, of hoodooism and the things that we have gotten into and some of the things they use, but in general, just what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something about that symbolism that I think resurgence of.
Right. Well, when we talk about some of the mythologies and stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the dead warriors were thrown into the cauldron and they were reborn so that they can continue fighting.
Right.
And there's lots of different tales, especially in the Celtic world and the Irish mythologies, where things would be put into the cauldron and they would be reborn.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could continually draw from the cauldron and it had a never-ending well.
Right.
So it's this life and death concept.
Mm-hmm.
It is the resurrection. And so the skulls and the crossbones and the pelvic bowl,
right?
Literally, we have a bowl in our bodies that these are the cauldron things that we carry with us. I think it totally makes sense to me.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And, you know, again, we're looking at, as you say, we have different mythologies. One of them, you know, is the Scandinavian, where, you know, there's the cauldron and they drink of it to gain wisdom, and the ones in the Celtic, the same brews where they gain wisdom, but then also the idea of regeneration consistently comes back around.
Right. And we talked about the Holy Grail, and we talked about chalices,
right?
So there is a link to the chalice and the Holy Grail, but there's also a link to the cauldron and the Holy Grail.
Yes.
And a lot of what we talked about with chalices also fits with cauldrons.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things around fire fits with the cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is connected to the element of well, the direction, not the element, of center, or the element of ether or spirit.
Right.
So it fits in all of these other elements because it can contain them all.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So it's this deeper mystery. Yeah.
And again, if you choose in doing magic, you can take your cauldron and put it in a particular area, a quadrant, to utilize it as that element to call in the deities, the spirits, the energy. So it isn't just allocated to only the center.
Right.
But as a magic tool in a more modern way, I guess, for what we're talking about, you can do that. So it does go to all of the different aspects in all the areas and yet stay in center. So
And in modern Wicca and modern witchcraft, you know, you're not often seeing a huge fire with the cauldron hanging over it, although that's cool. We should do that more often.
Yes.
But the cauldron is more often, sadly, a little bit of an afterthought.
Yes.
Or if you're doing something very special in that ritual and you want the cauldron, right, you can, we often use it as a tool of transmutation. We're going to burn something in it. And really, I think that's most often what it's used for, to burn something in
it. To burn something in it. I know that, you know, if we're going to release our wishes or release prayers or release negativity, we'll write it, we'll burn it, we'll speak it into the flame that is in the center. We do whatever it is that it is used, which is, it is the doorway.
Right.
So it is between present and the future in terms of what we have now that we want to get rid of, but what we want to rebirth in.
Right. Right. Again, that death life cycle is really held by the cauldron and symbol, right? And it is all of the things and none of the things.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that has become more popular, but also was the traveling cauldron, was a little small one that they would use called a gypsy pot.
Oh, which like that.
Yes, I did too. And it was, I think it's G-I-P-S-Y.
Okay.
For gypsy pot, which is, you know, the little black metal cauldron that had little three legs, but it was small because it could travel around rather as well as. So, you know, it became portable. Think of, you know, what you can put in a gypsy cart or any covered wagon if you're going anywhere. It's only a certain amount of room.
Yeah. It's also, I think, from a modern perspective and also what our pagan ancestors were likely doing is scrying, right?
The
art of doing divination by staring into something, right? You can do it with a flame, a candle, water, right? So you fill your cauldron with water. And in some traditions, in the Druid tradition I used to be a part of, we would create a censer with specific herbs and alcohol and other things, and then we would scry into the censer in a cauldron during ritual, right? And it would be, each of us would get to do that individually to receive our own message individually from that goddess. And specifically working cauldron magic, we were working with Caradhwen, who is a druidic goddess, right? So there's a lot of interesting stuff you can do with a cauldron now, right? Burn stuff, do some scrying, make some potions. You just want to be sure that you're cleaning it, or you have more than one, so you're not mixing stuff that shouldn't be mixed.
Right.
And think about the size of it. A lot can be done with a small cauldron. You don't have to spend $1 million on some huge honking thing.
It's impressive, and you would put it more likely outside than inside. I mean, I don't see huge cauldrons being brought into your living room.
Right.
Or, you know, unless you have a very large living room.
And if you don't have a cauldron, going to antique stores or the Goodwill or thrift stores and finding the right one can be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
We found several cauldrons at different little antique shops or secondhand stores or whatever.
Right.
And that's a nice way to reuse something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the picture that I took, which has the cauldrons, one of them is cast iron, which I think we need to mention in terms of utilizing flames and heat that you would prefer not to use a porcelain, unless you're going to do that for water, but it's three legs so that it is able to keep it up off even as an incense, a holder of incense, and also when you're dealing with heavy heat, which I'm going to leave you to talk about in spirit flame, is that you really want something that can stand that kind of heat, even though, you know, a copper kettle or whatever can, you want something that really can handle it because that's intense flame.
Yeah. Fire safety is important.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you know what you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
Be clear on what it's made of before you proceed. And, you know, also you want to make sure if it's a cast iron, that it's really cast iron, that it's not got some lead in it or something else that's going to poison you.
Right.
You know?
Especially if you're going to cook things in it.
Exactly.
That's the one thing. The one that I use, the biggest one that's on the altar, is for burning, for putting, you know, that kind of thing. I've never really put liquids in it because it was always for something, the bigger, heavier flame.
Right.
So, and it's interesting, in the Hermetic tradition, it's called a thurible if you use it for incense.
Yes.
Which I always thought was such a weird little name.
I love that word. Yeah,
thurible.
So, sounds so magical.
I know, it really does, such a thing. And, of course, we will say the famous one, the leaky cauldron of Harry Potter. I couldn't leave that out in terms of that.
I have some random cauldron fast facts.
Go for it.
Okay, I'll just pepper our conversation with them.
This is good.
So the first one here. In 14th century Ireland, there was a witch known as Lady Alice Hightower, and it was believed that she had an enchanted skull that she created from the head of a thief, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was also a 14th century witch by the name of William Soulis, who, by the way, Soulis is the name of a goddess,
right? Yes, it is.
And he was convicted in Scotland for many sorcery-related offenses, and he was discovered with a cauldron, and that was part of how he was accused, which is just so silly.
Uh-huh.
But part of how he was executed was, sorry, this is terrible, being boiled alive in a cauldron.
I guess they were trying to make a point.
Right? So here's some, you know, 14th and, two 14th century connections to the cauldron and witches. According to old legends, if a sorceress dumped contents of her cauldron into the sea, it will create a tempest. Right?
Well,
some weather magic there with your cauldron.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
That's true. And, of course, there's a thing that it's bad luck. If you choose to boil or brew another person's potion in your cauldron.
Yes.
That was kind of a trip. I'm like, well, what does that do for the things we buy?
Right. Yeah, if someone else made some item you're throwing in.
I know.
Or pick all your own herbs.
Yep. Guess that's sort of, you know, being really traditional.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand that.
Well, and here's one, another little superstition that is also probably like an old wives' tale, right? If you leave the lid off of your cauldron when you're preparing a brew, it portends the arrival of a stranger, and that's a Victorian-era superstition.
Yeah, so, I think I could see where that would
be.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And, of course, we have, you know, the Siberian shamans in doing their work with the cauldron and mostly, you know, using it, again, for their visions to be dismembered and be boiled and brought back by their ancestors for part of their work.
And we mentioned that the cauldron is connected to the womb and it's a feminine symbol, but there are gods from across the planet that are also connected to the cauldron, one being Odin, who Odin is very much a gender-fluid character.
Right.
He often has access to what is considered the feminine, right? So Odin is often connected to cauldrons.
Right.
That's where he drank from in order to gain wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
We have Indra, who is a Hindu god.
Mm-hmm.
His myth is eerily similar to Odin's.
Yes, I noticed that, yes.
It's crazy. I love it. Then we have Bran the Blessed, who is a Welsh god, and he is considered one of the main players in the Welsh pantheon, whose head is believed to be buried at Tower Hill in London.
Okay.
Very important, the head at the cauldron, right? And then we have Carnunnos, who is a wild forest energy, It is believed he was, just like you just said, dismembered, boiled, and born.
Yeah.
I love looking at culture and seeing how the stories are similar.
Right. Because you see the thread that is the common bond with all of these taken into the cultures that they are utilized in. And, of course, you know, you're talking about Cernunnos, the Gundestrup cauldron is a very famous version of what that's all, you know, what's there.
Right. And is it Sweden where they found that?
Yes.
Check it out. Google it.
It's still good. Definitely.
G-U-N-D-E-R-S-T-R-U-P. It's believed to come from 100 B.C. It was found in a bog, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Something, someplace.
So
they
think those, you know, smart, sciencey, ancient study guys, they think it was an offering. We don't really know, but it is quite a marvel.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
It is. I mean, pictures, those are the things you want to go see in person. It was like when I was lucky enough to go to Italy and I saw the different paintings by the masters. It was fascinating because the pictures don't do it justice. So of something like this, it's still, you want to go and just, you know, you can't touch it, but you want to just get close enough.
Yeah. But we have in the chat room, Denmark is where it was found, a Danish bog.
Okay,
thank
Danish
you,
bog.
Thank you, for the conversation of that.
And, of course, we have triplicities. As you said, Odin, he had three cauldrons. And it's interesting, the Norse, I have noticed, I know that, you know, there are that in the Celts, but they name their thing.
Oh, yeah.
They really, it's like they have certain things, but there were the three for that. There was the three for Indra.
Yep.
You know, there's the three matriarchs and the which is where the weird sisters in Shakespeare came from.
Right.
You know, with
the weird
bond.
Sisters are deities from the North Norse tradition, W-Y-R-D, weird sisters.
Mm-hmm.
They are the Urd, Verdandi, and, oh, man, that's terrible that I can't remember the third one's name. By lightning.
No, you won't. We'll pick it up here.
To me randomly.
It will be.
Shout it out. But they are the keepers of fate, of the past, the present, and the weird.
Right.
Because in the Norse system, there isn't a future. There's just potential.
Right.
Skuld is the other. Urd, Verdandi, and Skuld.
Ah, there we are. There we are. And, of course, the one thing I was mentioning before we started our show is in Egypt, there are the three cauldrons together as a hieroglyph that represents the great female mother, the deep, giving birth as for the representation of giving birth to all the gods and goddesses.
Right, right, which is, if you look in the Babylonian system, there is Tiamat, who is the great mother, that unknown that we are all birthed from the great cauldron.
And interestingly, in a lot of these myths and legends, and it's always about the cauldron of regeneration is under the water, under the lake, in the bottom of the sea. It's, again, going back to the watery womb concept.
Right.
You know, because it's nice and juicy down in the womb, so it's got to be that way out in the real world somewhere.
Often you find connection to anything that is witchy with the cauldron, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my very humble opinion is that this may be a more modern construct than what our ancient ancestors may have been doing. But, for example, Hecate is now very much connected to cauldrons because she is one of those symbols of being the queen of the witches.
Right.
Same with Aradia, another goddess who has been brought up as the queen of the witches. Right. These goddesses who hold that sovereign energetic are often depicted as crones, even when they're not, and they have this cauldron, and they stir the potion, and stirring life, and there's, you know, like that Caradwen stirring.
Exactly.
And Circe, another powerful. I love Circe.
I know.
She's one of my favorite Greeks.
She really put, you know, Odysseus in his place.
Right.
But, yes, and it's interesting because what I find with the cauldron and the goddesses is that it not only do you have the gods that have the energy that work with the female, feminine energy, not taking it over, but in balance,
yeah,
in harmonizing. The feminine energy in a goddess is considered powerful, and she's shown as a crone mostly, I think, because it is that wisdom that shines through, even if you are a maiden or a mother,
right,
aspect in the sense of youth or middle age, middle period.
Right.
But it's like shining through who you really are, your wisdom coming through.
Right. And we talked about often seeing the cauldron as a form of rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the cauldron where these gods drank from in order to gain wisdom.
Right.
There's also the cauldron of inspiration,
mm-hmm,
which is a huge thing in the druidic systems.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, there's Awen,
mm-hmm,
Awen, which is tapping into that divine flow,
mm-hmm,
being connected,
mm-hmm,
to divinity in a way that's poetic.
Right.
And so the cauldron of inspiration is where we can get some of that magic,
mm-hmm,
taking a drink from the cauldron of inspiration and connecting to the divine creative energy.
Right, right.
Part of what the cauldron energy can also bring.
Exactly. And isn't that true when we start to make things in our cauldron and create, we tap into creativeness and artisticness. It doesn't have to be having a baby or making a potion, but it is the creative process that we're tapping into. So taking a whiff or waff, as they would say, a
right,
waff of it, you know, the bruise or otherwise, because that was the other thing that they kind of talked about when I was doing some of my research about how they would have, you know, they'd be brewing these poisonous things, and then suddenly the fumes, of course, they're sitting there, and then they're going to have these visions, and I'm like, yeah, we're definitely, you know, you do, so.
Right.
But, I think that our energies basically are part of that as women, but I think, you know, the men also, because we will talk about this later, of the three cauldrons,
yeah,
that they too have it. So it's not like we're just saying, oh, yeah, we are the only ones. I mean, unfortunately, patriarchy did the worst part of saying we're the only ones and whatever, but we're a little more inclusive and
right, right,
putting it together.
Right. There's the womb,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yes.
But there's also, our bodies have cauldrons in them.
And yes.
After the break, we're going to break that down a little bit more. But it's clear, it's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Our bodies hold things in a specific way,
mm-hmm,
spiritual things, and also our organs.
Right, exactly. I mean, totally within that context.
Right.
And, you know, I think that as we can see, this is a symbol, an actual physical symbol, but of a cyclic energy.
Right.
So whether it's, you know, a calendar lunar cyclic energy or cyclic time energy, it's cyclic. It allows us to see that circle of, you know, dare I say, circle of life. I'm hearing the Lion King. Getting too much into the other side.
Well, and it's also, the cauldron is a receptacle,
mm-hmm,
so it can hold things, it can carry things, it can help you to process things,
right,
and be a place of transformation. And one of the things that's been documented several times from our ancestors is that the cauldron was also, there were specific cauldrons used for sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of ancient cultures, including the Greeks and the Romans, that would sacrifice animals and sometimes people in order to get inspiration,
mm-hmm,
right? They would kill the animal, drain the blood into a cauldron,
mm-hmm,
and then a brew or a potion would be made from that blood,
mm-hmm,
or divination would be done,
mm-hmm,
on that animal. And often the cauldron was the receptacle for receiving the wisdom that would be doled out,
mm-hmm,
right? So it's a place where things transform in one
right,
way, shape, or form, and you can receive wisdom or give wisdom.
Right. A side note, we have you know, a short period of time before we get to our break. But interesting is the correlation in hoodoo. A lot of times there is the bodily fluids that they talk about use of.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I remember from my training about using the menstrual blood when I did bleed was to create a boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Around, so utilizing it and then putting it with some water and then spraying it around, you know, just the same as you would do with urine.
Mm-hmm.
As a defense, but it is a female power zone.
Right.
And I know that in the hoodoo tradition, there's a lot of, you know, concepts about ingesting things if you want certain stuff. But again, it goes back to the power of that blood, the mm-hmm. essence, whether it's used in sacrifice or it's used in potions or it's used in some other form, but that comes with, you know, coming from the body and the cauldrons and
right.
the concepts of use of that energy.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Yes. So we will be breaking.
Yes.
We are. Okay.
And we will return with lots more
after
any goodness.
Yes.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candelo's Corner with Candelo Camusa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, Bit of Boxu with Madame Naya and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursday 6 to 7:30, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Friday 6 to 7, and Liquid Libations with Andrea Western, Saturdays 5 to 7, all time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
And we're back.
We are back with more cauldrons and lots more information.
Oh, and our cauldron here on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron Show,
yes.
Evelyn just pointed out that that was a new commercial.
I know.
How exciting.
I know. I heard that. It was going, there's something different. But then I just happen to love the music, so I mean,
yeah,
I'm kind of like...
I always dance when we play our commercial.
We're trying to keep our energy going here. So, spirit fire, my dear.
Yes, spirit fire, fairy fire, cauldron spirits, these are all different terms for ways to have a generally safe fire in your cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go off on a slight little tangent for a moment.
Good for you.
So in the reclaiming tradition, which is, as I've mentioned, my home tradition,
mm-hmm.
We are very eclectic, and every ritual is different, and we work with all of the gods possible.
Mm-hmm.
But every year at Imbolc,
mm-hmm.
we work with Bridget, and that is
uh-huh.
the only consistent god, F, that gets worked with. Right?
Wow.
Every year. And it started as this Waters of the World ritual where we were doing healing work so that the waters everywhere in the world would be free and
mm-hmm.
clean and flowing,
mm-hmm.
right? So obviously that's still very important work.
Right.
But Bridget, as you may or may not know, is a goddess who's connected to water and to fire
mm-hmm.
and to air and to earth. She's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, happen to love her a lot.
I can't tell.
Right. So one of the things we do at the Bridget ritual
mm-hmm.
is we have a fairy fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a cauldron that is lit through the whole ritual. And because it is a larger ritual and because people come up and make a pledge to Bridget,
mm-hmm.
the fairy fire has to be maintained. Bridget's hearth has to be maintained through the whole ritual.
Mm-hmm.
So I have firsthand experience of things not to do with fairy fire.
Okay.
So basically what I'm talking about is an alcohol fire.
Mm-hmm.
And most often folks use rubbing alcohol,
mm-hmm.
but you can use drinking alcohol. Elvira has some amazing stuff over here. Do you want to tell us what that
is? Oh, yes. In the Strega tradition, which is the Italian version of witchcraft, they have a liqueur Strega, and it's yellow. And I have to say that as a liqueur, it tastes pretty bad.
I was going to say, we should drink some. I'm curious.
I can open it up. You can have a, I have had one, and I'm like, no way. but they use that with the to create the blue flame, which,
right.
again, is the fairy flame, the spirit flame.
Right.
So it is used. I have a beautiful bottle here and haven't had the guts to start one,
right.
which will probably have to be challenged very shortly
yep.
down the road. But I just, you know, I bought it and going, okay, we're going to do this. And then I went to a ritual
mm-hmm.
with the Sonoma County Pagan Network.
Sure.
And one of the persons that was doing the ritual used the alcohol.
Yep.
And it kind of got a little out of hand.
Yeah.
So it was a little scary. I just sat there and I went, you know. So my own feeling about that is I back off from it.
Well, here from my experience,
mm-hmm.
like Elvira mentioned earlier, you want to make sure your cauldron has three little feet. So that it's not sitting on the surface. And even with those three little feet, you want to make sure that it is a heat-resistant thing that it's sitting on, or that you have a hot pad or, you know, something.
Sand, dirt,
right,
something.
Something so that the bottom of it isn't going to melt the plastic table at the hall you're using for your public ritual.
Exactly.
Right? and you can just use alcohol. An alcohol fire burns quickly and not as hot
mm-hmm.
as a wood fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can... It's a little bit, I'm using air quotes here, safer
mm-hmm.
than some other fires,
mm-hmm.
right? And something you can do to sustain the alcohol fire, because the thing about just pouring alcohol in a cauldron and lighting it is it's done.
Yeah, fast and furious.
So if you put a layer of Epsom salt in the bottom of your cauldron, and then you pour in rubbing alcohol so that it covers the Epsom salt
mm-hmm.
in rubbing alcohol, it will sustain a lot longer.
Very clever.
It can last up to... half hour, 40
mm-hmm.
minutes, depending on the size of your cauldron and how much you do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here are the things to keep in mind. You want to make sure it's on a steady surface, not some rickety table where it's going to get knocked over and spill the fire everywhere, because it's on alcohol. When the alcohol spreads out, the fire spreads out.
Yeah.
Okay. Warning number one. Warning number two, if it's time to put the fire out, you need a lid.
Mm-hmm.
So if your cauldron does not have a lid, I would suggest getting one, or not using it to have a fairy fire or a spirit fire. The Bridget ritual that I was referring to, we keep this fire sustained for several hours. So you have to relight it. The alcohol burns off and it needs to be relit. That requires putting the lid on the cauldron, making sure the fire is out before adding more alcohol.
Mm.
I have witnessed someone add alcohol to a burning fire and catch the rubbing alcohol bottle on fire. Not
Ooh, good. No.
Not good.
No.
So fire safety, folks, make sure you're making smart decisions. You can also add things, which I cannot tell you what they are, but you can find it, that will change the color of the fairy
right.
fire. You can make it a little greener or bluer or redder, depending
mm-hmm.
on the material you put
mm-hmm.
in. I have a friend who's part of the North Bay Ritual Planning Cell who's a chemist. So she's always bringing little interesting things for the fairy fire. They are a lot of fun. They can be very powerful. The other thing to know about a fairy fire or a spirit fire is if you burn paper in it, it doesn't sink and land like it does in a wood fire,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a lot of air in a fairy fire. And if you toss a little piece of paper in, it might just blow right back out.
Mm-hmm.
So be aware, be cautious, be paying attention
right.
outside.
Yes. Yes.
And it's something really beautiful to do if you want to work with the element of fire, or if
mm-hmm.
you want to work with center or spirit or ether,
mm-hmm.
or if you want to call in a goddess like Caradwyn or Brigid or the fae folk,
mm-hmm.
Gods who are connected to those energetics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to play with fire.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's kind of like I'm listening and I'm thinking of all the places that would be really great as a dramatic experience,
right. yeah.
you know. But and there is another one that we need to mention that people use is saltpeter.
Oh, yeah.
And, again, that is a combustible. It will cause an explosion.
Right.
You need to – a lot of people will use the cauldron and use the fire and then have that as a way to break apart, bust open, or release things.
Right.
But you have to be cautious about how you put it in and how much you use.
Right. It's an ingredient in gunpowder, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So keep that in mind.
Yes. Yeah. So that is part of the safety factors of using cauldrons for different kinds of work.
And keep in mind, it will get hot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool fire, but it's still fire.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go and grab it with your hands.
Definitely.
You know, use oven mitts or something that's very safe and you won't burn yourself off.
Right. Now you can, if you want to use, say, for the element of, if you're going to use air,
mm-hmm.
you can get dry ice.
Right.
And you put it in a little glass container, a ceramic container, and you put it inside of the cauldron.
Yeah.
And let it kind of bubble out.
Right.
So that's another one of those aspects. You can use another kind of element or item to work with.
Right.
And with the cauldron.
Yeah.
To put in the cauldron for what work you want to do.
Right. But there's a air. You could also get some charcoal
mm-hmm.
and burn incense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
mm-hmm.
connect to the air's energetic
right.
in the cauldron.
And using herbs and mm-hmm. things that you want to put on.
The possibilities are endless. It's quite a fun tool, really.
Yes, it is. It really is.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. One of the things I was reading is that there was a point where you were basically put in jail if you were caught carrying a small pot, a small cauldron at one point. When
humans.
I know. They kind of go, ah!
Right.
You know.
Hey, ma'am, what are you doing with that small pot over there?
We know you're a witch.
I'm just carrying my herbs.
It's my dinner. Yeah, right.
Going to grandmother's house.
Truly.
Oh, my gosh, human.
So, I know, they really kind of have. It's interesting for the actual element of ether or spirit.
Yeah.
The plant is mistletoe, which is interesting for this time of the year.
Right. It's a hallucinogenic.
It is a hallucinogenic. Please be careful.
Yeah, don't eat it.
No, and don't have it around with the little berries when you have your animals and things, because if it dries and falls off, that is something you don't want to do.
Right.
Oh, I did
it's
find
the berries.
It's the berries that are not cool.
Yeah.
And somebody mentioned that cats love cauldrons because they can play with it and get in it and then put their little toys in it and play with it.
It's
so,
kind of like a box.
Exactly. So obviously your cat needs to be kept carefully put away when you're burning anything in it.
Especially depending on how magical of a cat you have. Some cats could give a crap what you're doing.
Exactly.
And other cats just want to be in it and involved.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I've definitely smelled singed hair when my cat walked on my altar and
uh-huh.
got his tail
uh-huh.
close to the candles.
Yes,
yeah.
That's true. I had one that did that, too. But so we do have that, and obviously some of the other things that, you know, an animal they associate with this, which I was with ether, is the Sphinx.
Oh, sure, that makes sense.
Which, you know, kind of made me think, well, because I think when I started looking, it was like the cauldron, and then what did it represent, and then what are those, you know, correspondences, mm-hmm. and it was kind of trippy. I was just going, wow, this is pretty cool.
It is cool.
Yeah, because it has such a, it's so between everything.
Right, right.
So it can be regeneration, it can be death, it can be, you know, inspiration, and, you know, all these different things mm-hmm. that I understand the elements that, you know, and as we've talked of at least one element and we've talked of the tools, how they represent
right.
things, that this kind of incorporates everything.
Right. Yeah.
So, and I guess if we, you know, want to quickly now move on to what we wanted to talk about with the three cults.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
I love this stuff so much.
I know. So you said that you taught this.
Well, I've done a lot of work with the three cauldrons,
mm-hmm.
yes, and there's a workshop that I have taken, and I am working with the folks who created that workshop so that I can take their wisdom and continue to
mm-hmm.
teach that class, because
mm-hmm.
I am so passionate about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a concept that comes from a Celtic tradition, and that I think we've even talked about this on previous shows,
mm-hmm.
but the threefold system of our
yes.
body, right?
Yes.
We talked about the sort of fetch animal self
mm-hmm.
or the child self.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Celtic
chakra system, I'm totally culturally appropriating that word, but if you think about the energetic bodies of the chakras, those seven centers that run basically up our body, starting in our base to our crown, the energies move and spin and represent different things.
Right.
The Celtic system is very similar, but there's three energy bodies instead of seven.
Right.
And it starts at the base, which is the cauldron of warming, and that is our pelvic bowl. And the cauldron of warming is just like the root chakra. It's all that base needs, feeling secure, feeling safe, having a roof over your head and food to eat. And it also is connected to relationships and love, very much like the first two or three chakras.
Right.
The second cauldron is in the heart. It's the heart chakra space, and this is the cauldron of vocation. And the cauldron of vocation sits tipped over.
Yes.
Because you're constantly pouring out and receiving and pouring out and receiving, right? And the cauldron of vocation is about how we communicate and how we connect to people and what we do in life.
Right.
Right? And that moves up to our skull, which our skull is a turned over cauldron. And that's the cauldron that connects us to divinity, the cauldron of inspiration. And when we're born, that cauldron energetically is facing like a cauldron, if we were carrying a cauldron on our head.
Right.
Right? It is facing upwards to receive wisdom. But as we get older and as our soft spots close up, that cauldron turns over and fits right over our skull. And we have these moments of inspiration.
Right.
Right? Where we connect to divinity and our cauldrons are open and receiving. But it's the spiritual folks who, the monks and the nuns spend their lives trying to keep that cauldron
open.
But it's hard in our modern world. And each of these cauldrons have their own brew, their own shape, their own color. They're made of different materials. And what my cauldrons look like is going to be different than what Elvira's cauldrons look like, or your cauldrons, or Susie's cauldrons. We are each unique.
It's an individual. It sounds very much like this is a general point of it, like an outline, and then we each have our own specialized point of what happens and how we make it us, just like we are individuals, but we have a common point of reference, whether it's our culture, and as we were talking about earlier, how cauldrons fit into all culture.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same thing with this, sounds like, with the three cauldrons and how they are closed.
Right. And if you have done any chakra work and you understand the concept of connecting to that chakra, feeling it, opening it, waking it, feeling it spin and feeling energy move, right? You can do the same thing with the cauldrons once you've become aware of what they look like, what they feel like, what their brew is like.
Right.
And then you can check in with yourself. And this is something I have often had as a daily practice. How is my cauldron? Do I need to refill it? Is it a little weak? Is it bubbling okay? And it really gives me information on where I might be off in my spiritual work or my physical self.
Right.
And it can help to shape what I do to improve where I am in that moment. It's really cool stuff.
This sounds really, really, really neat. So that was, and it was funny because when I started, we started to do our check-in before we start our show, and we came to this, and Phoenix just went, oh, and da-da-da-da-da-da, and I'm like, okay, this is exact, because I kind of picked up on it in my research, and I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And yet I can see in the body and how it works and how this makes sense, and I understand, you know, the seven chakras, but that's because that's something you can relate to in one way, because it's more, it was become more common here.
Yes.
This is not as common because it kind of lost out in the changing over from one side to the other.
Right.
So I like seeing this come back.
Yeah. And when I first took this workshop, we were led through a very embodied process to connect to these energies and feel them and explore them. And I had, that night, I had the worst menstrual cramps.
Oh, wow.
I've had in my entire life.
Oh, wow.
I had to have one of the other students drive me home. I couldn't drive because I was in so much discomfort. And it's because I woke up this energy in my cauldron of warming in my belly that I had been completely disconnected to.
Wow.
Like, that's why I check in so often with these energy centers, because I had such a powerful physical reaction, you know? And this is part of my blood ancestry. So there is something to be said about that, too.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
But obviously, with that concept, we're kind of putting out the idea that maybe it might be something with regards to the cauldron work to do a little homework on that.
Yeah.
To, you know, kind of check out if there is a feeling content, not necessarily without guidance, if that is something that is needed, but it is a beginning point of reference with your actual physical cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
You can start relating it to your cauldron in yourself.
Right.
You know, and obviously starting at your foundation is a good idea.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. And if you don't have a cauldron, maybe you consider getting one or using something from your kitchen that could work as one in a pinch and having a fairy fire or making your own special herbal censer and doing some scrying in that cauldron. But if this is a magical tool you haven't done a lot of work with, give it a shot.
Right.
See what you think. Play with it.
Yeah, because that's, you know, one of the things which we will be talking about, I believe it's close to the end of the year or the beginning. We're doing the broom.
Right. That's on the 30th of December. We'll be doing a show on broom.
Yes. So that is the counterpart to the cauldron.
Right.
Which I thought was, you know, interesting. And, of course, we'll have a lot to say about that.
Always.
But I was like, because somebody, you know, again, I'm reading along and I've got my notes and I've got my information that I have. And then I start getting, oh, that's why.
Right.
If you notice, they're pairs. We've had the pairs of elements that are starting, the pairs of the major tools.
Yeah.
So even though there's a triplicity in one sense,
yeah,
there is the, and I don't want to say it in a negative, but a balanced duality.
Sure. And what I love about this is, you know, Elvira and I have a lot of experience. We have a lot of years in our practice.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing this show every week, both of us are learning new stuff or the origins of things that we've taken for granted.
Yes.
I love it.
This has been and is the best journey.
Yeah.
Because for me, it is bringing forth this information. And as Phoenix has said, we may have learned it. We may have just gotten accustomed to it, or it's just taken it for what we had to do, or we get new stuff, and it's just like, oh, look at this. And we come before the show just like kids talking about all this stuff that we came up with, as well as the things that we're obviously more every day, this is what we do, and we know how to do it kind of thing.
Right.
So realize it never gets old, and this is the part of why witchcraft is just that,
right?
A craft. You continue to learn.
Yeah.
And to me, that's super exciting.
Absolutely.
And
it'd be boring otherwise.
I know. But you know, that's the inspiration, you know, and that's why doing the different things that we've tried. So next week, 2 minutes. Next week is Freya.
Freya.
So yeah. I would say that's a definite. It's funny now that I've been talking and off and on the show and off with Phoenix, is I'm much more aware of of not just the Celtic and the Sicilian traditions, but now the Norse, because she comes with this background.
Yeah, I'm excited. Freya is one of my ladies.
I can tell.
Yeah, and she's excited because she likes to always be included. So she, I wouldn't be surprised if she calls in.
In some form.
Yeah, she is super stoked because you can never talk too much about Freya.
That's it. Yeah, the attention.
So it'll be a fun show. We'll get to talk about patriarchy and the lies of her being a slut. Fun stuff.
Yes, we know those.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, this has gone by fast again for all of us. And you definitely need to enjoy the weekend and be safe. And we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Explore a Verizon retail career in the San Francisco Bay Area and get a $1,500 sign-on bonus. Join the team that makes in-store experiences special by connecting customers with the perfect product every time. We offer standout benefits, including competitive pay, day one health and insurance benefits, $8,000 a year in college tuition assistance, plus bonus opportunities. Apply at Verizon.com/retail jobs. Again, that's Verizon.com/retail jobs. Verizon, it's better here. Verizon is an equal opportunity employer. Want great pay and lots of perks? Get a $1,500 sign-on bonus when you join the Verizon retail team in the San Francisco Bay Area now. Help connect customers with the perfect products every time. Apply at Verizon.com/retail jobs. Verizon is an equal opportunity employer.